All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Kabbalah of Character, lesson number 3. Okay, if you don't have a mystical soul map chart, you need one of these. So let me pass these around once again. Please take and pass back. I know we need some back there. You guys need some as well. James, please pass back. Appreciate it. Okay, you got, right? All right, you guys are good? Okay, let's begin. I want to begin with the story 3. One more? Okay, you got it? Okay, 3 Jewish men meet each other in Miami Beach. Who's been to Miami Beach? Yeah, obviously, right? Miami Beach. They're at, I don't know, the Eden Rock, the Fountain Blue. Who, right? Fountain Blue, Eden Rock, 41st Street, yes? Okay, good. All right. Fine. So they meet each other. These guys haven't seen each other in 40 years, 50 years, since the old country. Yankel, Shmaro, Chaim, it's a reunion. Fine. They discuss, what have you been doing the last 50 years, 40 years? First guy says, you know, thank God I came over from the old country, the United States, didn't know what to do. But I figure my name is Goldstein, might as well do something with gold. I made a killing. The next guy, same story with me, my name is Silverman, right? Decided to get into silver, made a killing. Third guy says, you know what, I couldn't do that. My name is Taylor. Now, Taylor's a good job for the old country, but a tailor in the new country, you're not going to make it big as a tailor. So they said, what did you do? He said, look, here's what I did. I went to the synagogue, and I prayed, and I said, God, help me make a living. And if you help me make a living, I'll make you a 50-50 partner in my business. They said, no, so how'd it turn out? Turned out great. What'd you do? Well, they said, you never heard of Lord and Taylor? Yeah. Lord and Taylor. Look, see, let me explain it. Have I ever told you about the Macy's origin story?
No.
I'm joking. I don't have one. Okay, so tonight's class is all about happiness. And the key to that's why I told the joke. So everyone's in a happy mood. Now we jump into the Kabbalah. This is the Kabbalah of happiness. This is the Kabbalah of character. But tonight we speak about happiness. Happiness is unfortunately such an elusive trait or such an elusive thing in our lives. As much as we know we want to be happy, and as much as science tells us and medicine tells us it's healthy to be happy, it's often so difficult to be happy. And then when you're not happy, you're stressed that you're unhappy. Are you with me on this? Yeah? It's like, I know I should be happy, but I'm not. This is how we do it in Yeshiva, in Talmud, right? I know I should be happy, but I'm not happy. So now what? Now I'm unhappy that I'm unhappy. Now it's worse. So here is the question. The question is, what do we do about it? How do we get a little bit happier? What is the key to happiness? Have you ever, okay, this happens all the time to me somehow. Have you ever reached into a drawer that has wires? Right, like different wires, plugs, cables, right? We all plug in phones or whatever it is. We have devices with cables. You reach in and you realize as you pull out the one that you want, they're all connected in a whole situation of wires. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
Nod if you know what I'm talking about. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm nodding also because I know what I'm talking about. So you pull out the thing and now you start like, okay, fine. So I know what I need. I need my wires. So you start pulling. What happens? Yeah, that's not working out. It's getting totally worse, right? It gets into a knot and then this and that. So what do you have to do? Help me out. Let's say let's say you have a ball of yarn. What do you need to do?
Take one. Find one.
Walk me through this, guys. I need advice. You thought you were coming here to hear a class? I'm getting advice on how to unravel my stuff.
Follow back to the stuff.
Okay, good.
Be patient. Find one and loosen it up and then find both and then
good. Thank you.
Step by step.
Yaakov, because you are so proficient in this, come on over after the class. Okay. No, I don't really have a wire issue, but that's exactly it. You need to find something, find a strand, find a wire, piece by line, piece by piece, unravel it little by little. You see, Kabbalah teaches us what exists inside of us. So if you're thinking something's not right inside, I want to tweak things to make my life feel better. I want to be more productive. I want to be happier. I want to be more well-balanced. I want to be a kinder person, more loving, compassionate, etc. You want to change something positively, about, change something about yourself for the positive. So let me just start pulling at something. It may not work. Kabbalah says, this is the map of your soul. And if you get to know the map, you'll know where things are. And you'll know where things might be tangled. And if you know where things are tangled, you can untangle them piece by piece, string by string, soul power by soul power. Make sense? So what we're doing here is identifying each of these spherot slash soul power spherot on a cosmic level, soul powers on a microcosmic level. The idea is to identify what exists under the hood, to get to know ourselves a little bit better, to unravel our personality and live better lives. Okay, so tonight we pick it up with our, I don't know, who's counting? The third energy, which is Bina. Keter at the top, I'm just going to go through the right. Keter at the top, Chachma on the right, Bina on the left. We're going to explore Bina and discover the key to happiness, how to enhance our happiness, and how to mitigate the things that cause us to be unhappy. Okay, so what is Bina? Let's jump straight in. What is Bina? Bina is translated as understanding, but I don't even understand what that translation means. So let's understand what understanding is. Bina is related to a Hebrew word. What does Bina sound like?
Boneh.
Boneh, which means?
Build.
Excellent. Boneh means to build. Bina is an energy of building. Anybody familiar with the kids show Bob the Builder?
Yes?
No relation to anything we're going to talk about tonight. Just figured I'd ask. Now, Bina means to build. Bina is that which builds upon what? It builds upon Chachma. Do you remember what Chachma was last week? Remember what we explained Chachma was? Somebody help me out. What was Chachma? Wisdom, but specifically, what is Chachma? Intellect of the soul, good. What else? Chachma. What's Chachma likened to?
Inspiration.
Bright idea.
Light
bulb. The light bulb going off. It's creative wisdom. Right? It's a scenario where you don't have the answer, you don't have the solution, you can't figure it out. You're in the metaphorical dark, and suddenly, boom, you get a flash of insight, inspiration in comic books, cartoons, whatever. It's depicted with the light bulb, the flash going off. I got it. Somebody says, what did you get? You tell them, wait, let me figure this out and then I'll tell you. But you know that you got it, but you don't really have it. You got it, but you don't actually have it fully yet. That is Chachma. Chachma is creative intelligence, the creative flash or the flash of creativity, the Barak HaMavrik, the lightning bolt, the flash that goes off and illuminates the mind. We said last week it's the doors, the portal of the mind opening up to see and behold the wisdom, the infinite wisdom of the soul. So the soul, the neshama, which is a piece of God, has infinite wisdom at its core, at its source. So chachma is when the doors of the mind, so to speak, not that the mind actually has doors, but it's when the walls of the mind open up. And your mind has the opportunity to gaze for just a moment at some deeper, divine, universal, whatever it is, wisdom. And a moment later, the door is closed. All right, you've seen enough. Now you have to build it out. So Chachma is where the mind sees the new insight, the wisdom, the new idea, creative intelligence, etc. You're seeing the depth of wisdom. Bina is where you build it out. Bina is where you build it out and you understand it. You flesh it out piece by piece. Okay, this is what I saw. This is what it means. This is how I understand it. This is how it applies to other things. This is the ramifications of it, etc., etc., etc. Which means we have three steps to the intellectual process. Step number one, or point number one, is that you and I have an infinite reservoir of wisdom in our souls. That's point number one. There's an infinite reservoir of wisdom inside the soul. Step number two, the soul, the mind opens and gains a glimpse of this wisdom of the soul. Step three is the mind then understands, disseminates, and expands upon the flash of intelligence that it saw. That is why, Kabbalah explains and Chassidus explains, that is why Bina is called Bina, because it builds upon that which was seen. You saw what's used in the language of Kabbalah, a seminal, obviously this is English, but a seminal point of intelligence, of wisdom, and now you're building upon the idea, you're fleshing it out, you're building upon it, Bina, Bonet, you're building upon it to give it depth and width and height. You're putting dimensionality upon this core point of an idea. So you begin with a nekuda, you begin with a point, and now you're stretching it. This way, that way, you're giving dimensions to this idea. So we begin with the wisdom, the infinite reservoir of wisdom inside the soul. Then at the next stage, so that's the repository of wisdom. Then the mind opens up. The windows, the portals, the shutters of the mind, the apertures of the mind open up to see the wisdom of the soul, to behold, it's re'iyah, it's sight, seeing the wisdom of the soul. And then the mind has to recreate, then the door is closed, and the mind has to recreate and build upon what you just saw. Now, this is also analogized in Kabbalah using a nature example. Bethany, please read text number 1, page 62. This comes from a very, very deep Kabbalistic work called Shar HaYichud, authored by the second of the Chabad Lubavitch Rebbes. This is a very, very profound work of Kabbalah. And here he likens this three-step process. He uses terminology and compares it to a spring and a river, as we'll see right now.
From the great depth of waters, called in Hebrew the Tahom Rabba, which resides under the earth, this signifies Keter, a spring of water spurts out. The spring represents Chochmah. It is connected by hidden channels to the great depth of waters, and the spring is their first revelation.
Can I pause for just a minute? I just want to make sure, because it's a very deep, it speaks in a lot of allegory, so I want to make sure we're all on the same page here. He's using water as an analogy for wisdom, right? Water and wisdom. And he says, there is the great depth of waters. That is where all the waters reside, deep under the earth. In other words, they're hidden, like the wisdom of the soul that you're not even aware that you have. Like when I talk about the soul has wisdom, some of you might be thinking, like, what soul has, like, where is the soul of wisdom? Like, I know what I know, and what I don't know, who says I have? Okay, it's like saying, the only water that exists is the water that I see above the earth. I don't believe in water under the earth. I mean, you can say that, but we know there's water under the earth. So that's what he likens it to. He said, there's water above that you can see. You can see lakes, oceans, rivers, but there's water underneath the ground that you can't see. So the great repository of wisdom slash water is under the earth slash under, you know, in the subconscious, so to speak, in the depths of the soul. He calls Keter. We know Keter, right? You and I know Keter. We're good buddies with Keter. I went out with Keter last night. Kidding, I didn't. But Keter we know is will, pleasure, but Keter in general means the deep subconscious of the soul. Deepest essence of the soul. Continue, please. Chachma is the spring that trickles out a little bit of water. That's the first moment that it comes above the ground. That's the first moment that you become aware of the wisdom that you have deep inside that you weren't even aware that you had. Continue, please.
The bubbling spring forms a trickle, and the trickle becomes a stream, and the stream becomes a mighty river. The river represents Bana. The source or depth of the river is the spring of Chachma, and corresponds to the power outflow from Chachma. The breadth of the river is the amount that the river expands over a wide area. The length of the river is the distance from its original source via many levels and stages, signifying the other sifra, until the river eventually flows into the sea, which represents Malchut.
Malchut, perfect. Now, okay.
Which will be explained.
Okay, great. Jay, grab a chair from here, right over here. Thanks. Okay, thank you. So let me explain a little bit about what we read. It has a little bit more information than we are able to cover right now, because it talks about some other energies, sfirot, and powers of the soul that we have not yet explained, including Malchut. Right there, the last line is Malchut. That is all the way at the bottom of our chart. All the way at the bottom of the chart is Malchut, and you're going to have to wait till lesson 8 until we speak about that. Sorry about that. It's coming up in a few weeks, though. So let me explain. The source of the waters originate underground in the great depth, cannot be seen. The first trickle, and that's, that represents Keter, the subconscious of the soul. Then you have the first emergence of the wisdom water as a trickle, chachma, undefined, without definition, without length and breadth and depth. It's not fleshed out. It doesn't have that it doesn't have the body of a river. Then it becomes the river. The river is Bina. That is the main thing that we need to know with regards to Bina. The river represents Bina. The river is when the trickle has expanded. It's that seminal point, that seminal idea, that flash of insight where you said to yourself, aha, I got it. Now it's fleshed out, and now you can make sense of it, and now you understand it. That is Bina. Bina is the river. Okay? The source or depth of the river is the spring of Chachma, etc. So Bina comes from Chachma, but Bina is different than Chachma. Make sense? Yes? Are we all expert Kabbalists at this point? No? Okay. Just to quickly recap. You have the depth of wisdom, three parts. Depth of wisdom, the subconscious wisdom that you're not aware of. The mind opens up, beholds that wisdom, you see the wisdom, you gain a vision of that wisdom, and the wisdom now you become aware of the wisdom, but only as a seminal point, as a little bit of a drop. You don't have it built out, you don't have it fully understood, but you kind of know that you know, but you don't know what you know. But you know that you know. So it's emerged into your consciousness, but it's not fully developed. And then you develop it. You think through it. You understand it. You ponder it. You meditate on it. You work it out. You write it down. You graph it. You chart it. Whatever it is, however you work it out. And then you understand it. When you fully understand it, that is Bina. You've built it out. It makes sense. It's like the river. Yeah.
Are we connecting Bina and God?
Not yet. That is when you're rafting inside the river. That is when you put yourself in the river. See, Bina is when you understand it. That is when you connect with it intellectually. It's now not just an idea, but it's you and the idea are close. So you're floating down the Chattahoochee. Right? You're just, it's Sunday. And you're, what do they call it? Shooting the hooch. It's a party. Okay, good. Yes? Fine. That's text one. Again, Shari Yichud. I mean, look, it's, Kabbalah speaks oftentimes in cryptic terms. So this is a bit cryptic, but hopefully this makes a little bit of sense. The main thing is to recognize within ourselves this process. How you move from not knowing to then gaining an awareness that you know, to then fleshing it out, being able to explain it to someone else, that which you just discovered, right? This is the process of intellectual discovery. You went from not knowing to gaining something, drawing something from the unknown into awareness, but you couldn't yet explain it. That's Chachma. So you have Keter, Chachma. And then when you can explain it, when you fully understand it, that's Bina. James. You can, but I don't know if that's creative. I'm saying, if it's creative, it's creative. If it's not creative, it's not creative. If you're just understanding stuff that you already know, then I don't know that that's called pure creativity the way Kabbalah is discussing it. In other words, let me explain very simply. Kabbalah defines Chachma as when the subconscious wisdom of the soul emerges into your consciousness. If you've already known it and you're applying it to something else or you're reshaping it or whatever it is, that's not Chachma. It's all in the realm of Bina. Like if you take an idea that you learned in one field of science and you apply it somewhere else, then that might be a creative application, but it's not necessarily chachma. Chachma is the emergence of an idea from what seemed like nothingness into being. It's kind of flashing from nowhere. Now, this is chachma. Let's now speak about the distinction between chachma and bina. Chachma is your mind seeing the wisdom that exists within your soul. Which means that there is an element of objectivity there. You are seeing the idea or the seminal point of the idea as it is. Bina is where you are processing and understanding it. Which means that there's a major degree of subjectivity there. Again, I'll say it again. Chachma is you seeing the idea as it is. Bina is where you are interpreting the idea to understand it as you are. I'll say it again. Chachma is seeing the idea as it is. Bina is understanding it as you are. Objective, subjective. Chachma is objective. Bina is subjective. That's why two people can see the same thing and have different experiences of understanding it. Right? The same, I'm not going to wade into the news, but I will. Right? But not specifically. But one world event can happen that everyone witnesses. A person says something, does something, right? Something happens objectively. Two different people understand it differently. It means two different things. And therefore, these two people will say, have completely different scenarios and explanations of what happened. The chachma is not different. In other words, that which happened is the same, but what it means is different. Bina is the imprint that you place on the chachma. Chachma is pure. Bina is
interpretive.
It's kind of like it's tinted. It's like you take pure water and you put it into a red glass. So now you look at the glass from the outside. Oh, it's red. It's red water. It's not red water, but you've put it into a colored vessel. So now it looks. It takes on the color. It takes on the appearance of what the vessel you put it into. So the chachma always remains pure. That which objectively happened. But the bina is the subjective glasses that you put on, right? Are they rose color glasses, right? Are they other forms of glasses? What tinting are you putting on? So again, here's what you need to remember. Chachma is the seminal core idea, the piece of wisdom that's coming from beyond. You're seeing it, you're beholding it, you're given a gift, the gift of sight of a new idea. Bina is where now you understand it. And you interpret it, you understand it as you are. Which means you bring everything about yourself. All the things that you know, all the things that you've been taught, all of your life experiences, you bring that into the process of understanding. In Chachma, you're not bringing yourself. Remember what we said last week, Chachma is the embodiment of? Last week, what did we say? Chachma is the ultimate form of humility. You have to let yourself go. If you still want to hold on to what you know, you'll never be open to new wisdom, to the creative subconscious. If you're holding on to what you have, then that's all you'll have. Did I say this last week? I don't think I did. I think I said what I'm about to say. Now, you wouldn't know. You wouldn't know, but I didn't. I said it Sunday in a different context. I'll say it now. If you think what you thought and you say what you said and you do what you did, you know what you'll have? What you had, right? If nothing changes, then nothing changes. Why is it relevant? Who knows? I just wanted to say it. But here's my point. Yeah, if you think what you thought, and you say what you said, and you do what you did, you'll have what you had, right? If nothing changes, nothing changes. So chachma, I don't remember the bridge here, but it's fine. So chachma is the pure vision of the idea as it exists beyond your framing, beyond your imprint, beyond your signature, beyond your tinting and shading, etc. That's what Chachma is. Bina is where now you take the idea and you package it in your mind, you toss it around, you understand it, you apply it. Oh, this is what it means. This is what it, these are the implications. That's why this happened. You figure it out. When you're figuring it out, it's a very personal experience. As long as you're seeing it, right? Chachma is humility. Chachma is the ability to, Chachma is not about you. Chachma is your mind letting go of itself to behold, to envision, to get a glimpse of something beyond yourself. That's what Chachma is. Bina is you understanding it. It's subjective. It's ego. Bina is ego. It's not a bad thing. It's just a thing. It is what it is. Bina is you understanding. Yeah.
Can you misuse Bina?
Oh, 100%. Totally.
I mean, I was being rhetorical, of course.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean,
you can take, hey, listen, somebody can do something positive, and you can say, I know why they did it. Oh, you think they were trying to be nice? Oh, come on. Are you kidding me? Do you know who they... Do you know... That whole thing is being at work. That whole interpretation, why they did it, how they did it, all of that spin, that's all Bina. That's where it happens. Bina is the spin master. I like to take your stuff and run with it. I'm just saying. But now we can get back to your point.
I'm saying, if you look at nuclear physics and fission, it was very important work in the 1920s to the 30s and early 40s. But obviously, it ultimately was used as a bad.
Right.
And clearly, I mean, there was a lot of chachma there.
A lot of chachma.
Some good bina, but also some
bad bina. You can take the idea and put it into whatever vessel or container that you'd like. 100%. I would say that application is 100% Bina. Applying it to something? Sure. You can apply it, right, nuclear energy. You can apply it for good. You can apply it for devastation. It's the same power. The Rebbe once spoke about the power of, the nuclear bomb, the atomic bomb. How one splitting one atom can unleash a force that's so destructive. There's a positive message. If I can split my own ego, my own Adam, my own atom, I know it's different, and I get it. Work with me here. But if I can split myself open a little bit, I can break myself, humble myself just a little bit, I can unleash a force that changes the world for the positive. So yeah, you can take an idea and apply it, move it around for good, and God forbid for the opposite, 100%. All that is Bina. All the application is Bina. Chachma is the pure nekuda, the pure point. Bina is all the stuff that comes afterwards. Peter.
It seems like you could describe these applying to Bob Ross with a palette of pain.
Anything Bob Ross related, I am on board. I am all Bob Ross all the time.
Creates these beautiful landscapes.
Yeah.
Just from the palette of all these different colors.
Yeah, I'm inspired to paint right now. Happy trees. Oh, happy trees, guys, tonight.
So,
happy trees.
So in your mind, is there a way to sort of explain Bob Ross?
Oh, man. The Kabbalah Bob Ross. That, I think that's a 10-parter right there. That's its own, that's got to have its own, its own masthead.
So you don't see that?
No, I mean, I think we talk about creativity and application. I'm sure it exists within the arts also. You have a creative idea, and then the question is, how are you going to execute the vision? Think about it this way. Here's another way to understand it. Let's talk about language. Let's say you're trying to write something. Writing is actually an amazing medium because it forces you to really organize. Chachma is a little all over the place. Remember I said last week you can look at a painting and see it in one moment, and that's chachma. Bina is where you're trying to explain it to someone, and it has to be in a linear fashion. So chachma is a little bit like, it's all at once. It's like simultaneous. It's all at the same time. Okay, that's chachma. Chachma is you're seeing it, it's all at the same time. Bina is kind of like, so writing would be more of a Bina thing. You're taking an idea, and you have to now write it out. How many ways can you convey in writing the same idea? it's almost unlimited. You can start the sentence from here or from there. You can write it in first person. You can write it in third person. You can write it as a story. You can write it as a... You can convey the same truth in any number of ways. I would say almost infinite number of ways. The point that you're conveying is chachma. It's one point. But the form that it takes on is bina. So Bob Ross is feeling an emotion or trying to convey something. That would be the chachma point. The bina would be... the packaging. Happy trees. Always happy trees. Okay, now, so that's a little bit about chachma and bina. Chachma is objective and bina is subjective. Now, here's another example. Anybody familiar with Hillel and Shammai? Or the academies of Hillel and the Academy of Hillel and the Academy of Shammai? So these are two of the most famous, sages and intellectual sparring partners in the Mishnah and the Talmud. And when I say sparring, I don't mean, God forbid, that they actually, you know, fought or argued or anything like that. They had disagreements on matters of Jewish law, and they had very civil discourse, and it was all about striving for the truth. Sorry?
No,
I'm with you. I don't have a good comeback though. I slowed it down to find something, but I got nothing. I got nothing. All right. So Hillel and Shammai would look at, and their respective academies, they would look at a verse, or they would look at a law, like a law that we know, a clear law that's defined in a previous source. And they would say, okay, well, how does this law apply to this other case, this variation? Right? This law we know. But what about the variation? How does that work? And they would have disagreements. One would say like this, one would say like this, one would say, oh, in this case, it's not kosher, you can't do it. And the other one would say, no, it is kosher, you can do it, 100%. Sometimes you have to do it, you have to do it, you can't do it. Which one? This guy says nice, this guy says night, this guy says day. Total opposites. They all stemmed from the same core truth. The chachma was the same. It was the bina that was different. In other words, they all began with the same seminal points of wisdom. In this case, maybe not creative wisdom that they came up with, but wisdom, creative wisdom, that was transmitted from on high. So they began with the same point. The question is, how do you develop it, understand it, and then apply it to other cases? And that's subjective. So you have Beit Hillel, the Academy of Hillel, or Hillel himself, who understands it and frames it and then applies it in one way. And then you have the Academy of Shammai, or Shammai himself, who understands it, frames it, and applies it in a completely different way. So this is how you have great sages, great Talmudic sages, Mishnaic sages, starting from the same place and ending up in completely different destinations. How is it possible? If you're all starting from the same place, how do we end up so divergent? And the answer is because bina is subjective. Now, Kabbalah traces the subjectivity, if you will, of these two individuals, Hillel and Shammai, and says it has to do with the origins of their soul. You know, we all have, I'm mentioning this only parenthetically, so I'm not going to get too caught up in this, but I feel like it's important to mention. Each of us, this is the template of our souls. We each have these 10 powers. And yet, I think I mentioned this in a previous class. At least I meant to mention this. We each have a different percentage or formula of each of these powers. Did I mention this?
No, it makes good sense.
It makes sense, right? Anybody familiar with design? Photoshop, maybe? Yeah, Photoshop design. So you know you can take like a picture, photograph, or whatever it is, a painting, or any piece of any graphic, and you can like slide the colors, and you can make it red, or you make it blue, you make it green, just by sliding it, just by like manipulating it. You can make it darker or lighter, the contrast, the exposure, all of that, right? You can just manipulate the picture, you can change the background, you can change the color of the eye, you can change anything, right? This class is sponsored by Photoshop. Don't forget to buy your monthly subscription. So the whole suite, no, I'm kidding. Maybe they're watching.
Adobe.
Anybody watching on Facebook Live is like, Okay. We just lost like half of the viewership right there. Super creepy. I just got really close over there. Sorry, guys. Anyway, let's bring it back. The point is like this. Each of us has a different blend of all of these soul powers. So some of us have a lot of chesed. Chesed is love. We haven't gotten to chesed. Chesed is next week. But some of us have a lot of chesed. Big heart. Giving and kind and loving. And yes, what's mine is yours. It's no problem. Some of us are more gvura. Gvura is not so giving. Gvura is more withholding. It's like, wait, that's mine. I'll respect your stuff. You respect my stuff. It's a little bit of a different energy. Everyone has the capacity for both. That goes without saying. But everyone is tweaked a little bit differently. Some have like the slider of, right, not the sandwich slider. Or you're mixing audio. You bump up the bass or the treble or whatever it is. Yeah, right, the brass. So chesed sometimes can be bumped up. It's amplified. And the gvur is the... Both. So Kabbalah says that the soul of Hillel came from a chesed dominant place. That's why Hillel is typically more lenient in his understanding of Jewish law. They all begin with the same Torah, but how do they understand it and apply it? So Hillel, with a soul that has a lot of chesed, a lot of love, is very loving and forgiving. And Shammai, who stems from the spiritual reality, the plane of Gvura, has a lot of Gvura. So he's a little bit more strict, stringent. And it's reflected in the rulings, in their respective rulings. So understand this. I know I'm speaking about emotions. Chesed and Gvura are emotions. Love and discipline. Giving and withholding. And today is about Bina, which is an intellectual power. But work with me. What I mean to say is, based on personality, experience, nature, nurture, all of the above, who you are, that shades and that impacts the way you think, the way you understand. So you and me, you and I, we can see the same thing. We can read the same article, and you and I will report it differently to other people. We'll understand it differently. We'll apply it differently. That's where the subjectivity comes in. Yep.
So isn't it so that Hillel felt we have to add a light every day, but Shammai did the opposite.
You have to take away a light, yeah.
Yeah.
Hillel focuses on the good, on the positive. Right? We have to add more and more and more. Shammai focuses on the negative. Shammai says, oh, the enemy is strong. Eight. You need eight to combat the enemy. The next night, right, weight class. Right, remember those video games? I'm not advocating violent video games. I feel like I need to do a PSA. Children. Anyway, right? But remember those games? Right? You punch and then their meter, their power meter gets less and less. Are you with me on this?
Yeah.
Right? And then it gets red, and then boom. Okay. So the same thing is true. Shammai says, the enemy, the forces of evil, start off with like big power. So the first night, eight. And then they're a little bit less. They're weakened. So you only need seven. And then six and five. Focuses on the negative and the opposition. Hillel says, don't worry about the other guy. Worry about yourself. How many lights am I bringing to the world today? One, good. Tomorrow, do better. Two, three, four. And eventually, whatever needs to disappear, disappears. But I'm working on the positive around myself. So it all ties in. Love, discipline, self, the other, positive, maybe a little bit negative. Not negative in a bad sense, but like, you know, optimistic, pessimistic type thing. It's all personality driven, and it all reflects. It's all reflected in the way we understand. So let's circle, let's bring it back to you. And once, let me just bring it back together. So for you and I, what this means is very simple. When we are operating in Chachma state, it's not us. It's the idea. It's the wisdom. In other words, we are seeing. We are beholding. We are witnessing. An idea is something beyond us. It's not about us. We're witnessing it, but it's not about us. It's not limited to us. It's not defined by us. Bina is the moment of definition. It's the moment where you define it the way you understand it, the way you want to understand it, etc. Now, here is a big idea. attitude. Oh, so bina, a good word for bina is attitude, an intellectual attitude. The way you see something is your attitude about that which you are seeing or understanding. So attitudes affect not only the way you think, the way we think, but the way we feel and the way we act. Again, let me explain, all using the Kabbalistic chart, Kabbalistic map. The mind dictates the heart, and I don't know if I mentioned this before, but all of the above dictates what we're going to do. Because if you know something and you feel something, you're more than likely going to act in a way that corresponds to what you think and how you feel about it. So, thinking with a certain attitude, the bina that you have, everyone has their own inflection of bina, their own accent. Bina is an accent. Everyone has their own bina accent. And so your bina accent doesn't just affect the way you think about things, everything, but it also affects the way you'll feel about the thing that you're thinking about, and it will affect the way you act. Very simple example. You have a job, and you decide to have a positive bina attitude about the job that you're doing. What will that, an attitude in mind, what will that cause you to feel? If you have a positive attitude about the work that you're doing, you'll feel happy. And if you feel happy about your job, how are you going to act? How are you going to act in your job? More productive. Let's talk about the flip side. Let's say you have a negative bina attitude, and you think about your job in negative terms. How are you going to feel about your job? Yeah, you're going to feel not so happy about it. Resistant. And then how are you going to act in the work that you're doing?
Dangerously.
Hopefully not. But you're going to act a little bit more lethargically, right? Think about it. When you're excited about something, you're more, right? You're moving a little faster. When you're not so excited, you're a little bit more lethargic. That's the nature of the human being. So the way we think doesn't just affect our minds. It's not like the bina attitude only affects the way it's framed in the head. It affects the way we feel about it in our heart and the way we actually walk through life. Let's take a look at text number 2. Marnim, please read text number, wow, look at this, Thomas Jefferson, page 63. Now, I know what you're thinking. Thomas Jefferson in a Kabbalah class? I guess, Thomas Jefferson in a Kabbalah class. Text number 2, page 63. How powerful is that? Right? If you have the right attitude, nothing can stop you. This is bina, mental attitude. It's straight up bina. Talking about bina. If you have a healthy, positive, healthy is a judgment. If you have a positive bina, right? A positive bina, unstoppable. You're excited, you're going to get it done. If you have a lethargic or negative bina, then nothing can help that. You're not going to move. All right, take a look at William James. Who's William James? There's a bio there if you choose to look at it. Page 63, text 3J.
Human beings can alter their lives by altering the attitudes of mind. As you think, so shall you be.
How powerful is that? You can change your life by changing, I'm going to paraphrase, by changing your bina. Change your bina, change your life. We have bumper stickers on the way out tonight. You can take that and put it up. We don't, but we should. Change your bina, change your life. The way you see the world, not the way the world is, the way you see the world. And that's bina, that's you. See, that's tonight. This is tonight's class. How you see the world is in whose hands? Your hand. That's your hands, how you see the world. How the world is how the world is. How you see it, that's you. That's you. And me. Well, no. How you see the world is not me. I'm sorry. I walked that back. How you see the world is you. That's your choice. That's you. You see it positively, it's a beautiful world. You see it negatively, everything's terrible. Right? That's the way it is. positive thought. We know the studies. People that have positive attitudes, that see things positively, live longer, healthier, etc., etc., etc. So the point is like this. How we see things is the product of Bina. The way things are objectively, that's Chachma. But how we see things, that's the product of Bina. Bina is subjective. Bina is us. It's our imprint. It's our fingerprint on that which is ruminating in our mind. That's us. Okay. Now, Kabbalah takes it a step further. This is based on a verse from King David, from the book of Psalms. Okay, James, please read text number 5.
The person once implored
that... No, that's 4. I think that's 4. We're skipping 4. Yeah, 4 is so last year. Text number... It isn't, but text 5.
The mother of the children rejoices.
Okay, very cryptic 3 words. Aim habanim semecha. The mother of the children rejoices. When, where, what? What's the context? Like, what's going on here? Kabbalah says, forget context. Let's explain this on a mystical level. What is Aim Habanim, the mother of the children? What is mother? What is the mystical, the Kabbalistic energy of the mother? Who is the mother? What is the mother? In other words, let me explain what I'm asking. You have a chart of Sphero, chart of mystical powers and soul energies, okay? Tell me, you don't have to answer this question, but this is what I'm asking and I'll answer it. Where is mother? Where is father for that matter? So Kabbalah says, father is Chachma and mother is Bina. Let's get biological just for a moment. Nothing too crazy. A little bit biological, right? If we understand the difference between Chachma and Bina, the Chachma is a seminal point of wisdom that needs to be fleshed out and developed by Bina, correct? Yes? Spent a lot of time on that point. Hopefully it makes, right? Hopefully it resonated. If that's the point, if that's true, then which of those two is the father and which is the mother in the context, if you think about it, in the context of procreation? Who provides a seminal one drop, one piece, one nekuda, one point, and who fleshes it out and builds it out and adds dimension and life? Who has which role? Help me out here. Who is Chachma?
Dad.
Father. And who is Bina?
Mother.
Good, fine. You guys are Kabbalists. Come on. You guys are natural Kabbalists. Natural Kabbalists. More, huh?
Capitalists.
Yeah. That's a Kabbalist. It's a Kabbalist with like with a flow of cash, with some resources. Yeah, with a shop. That's like a Kabbalist that's selling shirts, natural born Kabbalist, and is making a mint off of that stuff. That's a capitalist, the Kabbalist. But anyway, we all digress. Chachma is father. Bina is mother. Let's explain it. Let's make sure we totally understand. Chachma is the singular, indivisible point. Bina is where it expands and it develops, it grows, I said expands already, right? And it's formed, it takes on a life. King David writes, where is joy? Is joy in father or is joy in mother? Aim habanim smecha, where is the joy? In father or mother?
Mother.
Aim habanim, the mother of the children rejoices.
That's work.
Hold on one second. Slow it down. Don't think about the application yet. Don't get scared off here. The mother of the children rejoices. That means that where is joy born in the mind? Where is the first emergence of joy? It's in the experience of Bina. We can understand this on 2 different levels. Number one, in the aha moment, when you didn't know, and now you suddenly know. The light bulb goes off, the flash of creative insight. Wow! Right? When that happens, are you rejoicing yet? A little bit, but not fully. Because you can't yet understand it. I mean, it kind of feels exciting, but you can't rejoice yet because you don't really have it. The moment you can enjoy it is when you have it. You enjoy it when you got it. Right? So Bina, which is understanding it, now you can enjoy it. You can enjoy it, you can explain it, you can teach it, you can develop it, you can work with it. So that's why Bina, the development of Bina, leads to this, not leads to, but is synonymous with the sense of joy, because joy happens in Bina. But there's another deeper way of understanding it. And that is that what is joy at its core? And this is a major piece of tonight's class. What is joy? What is happiness? I know I'm using them synonymously, and if you think they're not synonymous, that's fine, but I'm gonna conflate the two. Don't worry about it. I'm not being precise in the language. What is the secret to joy and happiness? What is the secret? Bina. You see where we're going with this? What's the secret to happiness? It's how you think. It's attitude. Bina is attitude. So again, Bina is joyous, number one, because now I finally understand it. That's on a very simple level. But Bina is happiness, because what is happiness if not an attitude? Let me explain one of the greatest myths that you and I have ever been taught. We've been sold a myth that the secret to happiness is a device. A device. Or the secret to happiness is a certain item of clothing, or a car, or a house, or a bag, or whatever it is. This is the message that we are told again and again and again. I'm not going to mention any names, but there is a brand, there's a company that sells itself, and that's fine, it is what it is, it's sales, right? It's Madison Avenue. But it sells itself open happiness. If you buy this and you consume this, you will be happy. In other words, the implication is that this will give you happiness. Happiness, I've taught this before, it's a very powerful thing. You know, the etymological root of happiness is hap. What other words begin with hap?
Happenstance.
Happenstance. What else? Happen. What else? Haphazard, good. What's common to all of those? Random and accidental. This is how we live our lives. Not we, right, but others. This is how people live their lives. If I get the job that I want, and the person that I want, and the house that I want, and all this stuff works out, if all that happens, then I'll be happy. And then what happens? You're not happy. We're not happy. Why? Because happiness is not what happens to us. Happiness is, as Kabbalah explains it, an attitude that we have about what we already have. Or really, more importantly, who we are. Happiness is not something that happens to us. See, that takes the keys of happiness out of our hands. See, the societal approach to happiness, or the societal perspective on happiness, really takes away any autonomy, any control that we have on happiness. It's like, well, if all of these things line up in your life, then you have the right to be happy. If you have enough money to afford that, then you can be happy. If not, well, sorry. Yeah. That's, you know, I guess you're not going to be happy. That's the rumor out there. That's what goes around. So Judaism teaches happiness is not something that happens. Happiness is a set of attitudes that we have. I want to frame this by using a teaching from the Mishnah. It's not in the books. A Mishnah from Pirkei Avot, Ethics of the Fathers. It says in Pirkei Avot the following. Ezehu Asher. Who is rich? And the answer is Hasameach Bechelko. One who is happy with their lot. And honestly, it makes no sense. Who is rich? The one who is happy with his lot. It's the opposite. The sages, come on, they messed up. God forbid, right? It's opposite. It's, instead of asking who is rich, and the answer being he who is happy, it should have been, who is happy? He who is rich. That makes sense, right? Who Ezehu Sameach, who is happy? Right? Ha'asher, the rich one. If you're rich, you'll be happy. That's what we've told people. That's the big lie that we've been sold. Right? If you have, then you can be happy. Your permission to be happy. That's not what happiness is. Happiness is not what we have. You can have everything and not be happy. You can have nothing and you can be happy. Happiness is first and foremost an attitude. Happiness is aim habanim semecha. The key to happiness is aim habanim is the mother. Bina. The key to happiness. We're sharing the key to happiness here. This is not no small potatoes. The key to happiness is bina. An attitude. If you think that what you have is amazing, you'll be happy. If you think that what you have is the worst, you'll be unhappy. Straight up. Your emotional disposition of happiness or the opposite is totally dependent upon the attitude, the intellectual attitude and disposition that you maintain. The key to happiness is in the mind. Which is why in the Hebrew, and I wish I had this on the board, whatever that, right? In the Hebrew, the word machshava, which means thought, shares the same Hebrew letters as the word bisimcha, which means living in a state of joy. Machshava, bisimcha, same identical letters. To be joyous is to have the correct set of thought attitudes. Yes?
Let's just say, comment on, someone who's depressed, they can't just think themselves to be happy.
Correct.
It's
not as easy as that.
Yes.
Right.
It reminds me of the, in the 90s, the self-esteem movement. You are great. You
right.
are powerful.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah. Yeah.
Comment on that. Like, you can't yeah. make yourself happy.
So I'm going to give four different practical tools for happiness. That's the next step of this class, is to give four practical tools for happiness and three tools for mitigating sadness. And I, with a massive disclaimer that this is not, there are certain situations that are a little bit more serious than your certain things we can help in a self-help fashion, but sometimes things are a bit more serious and you need something a little bit more. Someone might need more professional guidance through this. So what we're going to do tonight is explain general themes taught in Kabbalah about how to develop and nurture a happy attitude, happy bina, and how to try to push away the negative bina attitude. But you're right. It's not a magical fix, but we're going to present some strategies that hopefully will resonate and hopefully might be able to help at least some of us. Now, along with that, I need to clarify that bina is not necessarily a happy attitude. Remember, bina is attitude, intellectual attitude. It could go either way. A person could have a negative, when I say negative, I mean a not happy bina, look at everything as being negative. A person could have a very happy bina disposition, attitude, which is looking at everything in a positive light. But this happens in bina, yeah.
I
think gratitude can lead to this, or gratitude is a product of this. I think gratitude can go hand in hand with this. I don't know that it's only gratitude. I think in the statement of our sages that who is rich, he who is happy with his lot, there's a lot of gratitude there.
Right.
There's a lot of gratitude there. So I think gratitude is a very strong piece of it, but I don't think that gratitude entirely sums up that experience. Again, gratitude is part of it. It might derive from it. It might lead to it. But it's not in totality equivalent to gratitude.
Now, what about resiliency?
All part of it. Resiliency, think about it.
Right.
If you have a positive disposition, you're more likely to dust yourself off and try again.
Exactly.
Whereas if you look at everything negative, then why should I bother in the first place? Right? The world's out to get me. So, whatever. Right? Might as well hide or whatever it is. And I'm not making light of anything and feelings and emotions, which are very serious. But what I mean is, it all begins in the way we frame it in our minds. And that, we know this. We know this on every level, psychologically, but we know this, science and medicine and self-help. We know that our emotions have to do with how we think. Kabbalah says, though, in such a beautiful way, You want to feel chesed, you want to feel gvura, you want to feel these things. It all emerges from bina. Keter leads to chachma, leads to bina, and again, that is kind of works together with keter. We discussed that in the first lesson. But from bina, now we branch off into the emotional world that we live in. So if you want to feel something, you want to feel something, especially if we want to feel happiness, the key is developing a healthy sense or a positive sense of bina. How your bina goes, that is how your emotional disposition will go. So throughout this course, we've been presenting various techniques and tips and definitions for what it means to be a mensch. So our latest definition of what it means to be a mensch, what does it mean to be a mensch? I'm glad you asked. It's to have a positive bina attitude. A mensch has gratitude, resilience, and it all stems from a positive bina attitude. You and I have a choice, how we view things. You can view it and frame it. You can view it and frame it in a wholly negative way or in a positive way. It's our choice. Now, it might be difficult to change that. If we find ourselves, or if we know about ourselves, that we have a tendency to look at things in a negative light, so you can't just snap your fingers or wave a magic wand and change that. But the first step to changing that is identifying wherein this lies. If you want the cable, the micro USB cable, you can't just start pulling at that thing. If you want the red piece of yarn in a big yarn ball of many different colors, I don't know if yarn ball is a thing, it's a noun, but it is now, you can't just start pulling at things and hope you get it. You have to identify it, unravel it, and work on it. Which means, when you and I know what's under the hood, and you and I know this is keter, subconscious of the soul, will and desire, this is chachma, creative intelligence, this is bina. This is where I frame things in my mind. And I start feeling, I start becoming aware of, where is it in my thought processes, where is it that I begin to step in and I start giving a narrative? Where is it, as I start thinking about things, at what stage of my thought process do I inject, I know why, or I can explain it. Where do we begin to impose or impress our imprint, our ego, our self-imprint on something that's objective? Where do we move from a person noticing what someone does to judging them for it? I know why they did it. There's two things. There's what they did, and then there's I know why they did it. The more we pay attention to our own mind and wherein lies the divide between chachma, which is objective, and bina, which is our ways of thinking, that can help us isolate the bina experience and begin to work on it as an individual area that needs attention. If we think, well, I don't feel happy, I don't know where to start, where are you going to start? But if we can hone in on aim habanim smecha, the key to happiness is bina attitude. If I can change my mind, it can change my life. That's big. Change my mind, change my framing, change my happiness quotient, that's huge.
So when we're going from chachma to bina, and you said chachma is like the gift of spirit to us, it's a pure insight. And then bina is kind of like our gift to spirit, because we're developing
yes.
it, we're bringing it into the world.
Yes, it's what we contribute, yeah.
So as a writer, I'm asking you personally,
yeah.
because this is, there's a lot of factors and a lot more factors. How do we know that we're true, we're staying true to the spirit, to the actual insight? Like for me, I just wanted to tell people, hey, this is what it was like in the world of nature. You know, this is what the experience truly was. But I could color it any way I want. I know I'm going to color it with my personality.
And you will. There's no way. I mean, as you probably know, I've done many translations of Kabbalistic texts, right? There are many books that I've done.
Yeah.
And when translating, I mean, I'm not saying it's more or less, but there's an inherent challenge. How do you take ideas that are, number one, perhaps foreign concepts, not perhaps, but in the sense of Kabbalah, foreign concepts in a foreign language and translate it to contemporary language in a way that can resonate to the reader. Right? So how pure do you stick to the original, and how much framing do you do? And there's always a balance. And as a writer, you will have to find a balance that works. Because the truth is, someone who's reading almost expects, especially from, I mean, unless you're reading something that purports to be objective, but if it's not, if it's meant to be, you know, your framing of it, then it should be framed. And that's fine if it's framed. But know the power of framing. The point of tonight's class is recognize where the framing happens, recognize how framing happens, recognize the power of framing and the power of positive framing. If we can frame things positively, we can radically change our happiness. And it doesn't require us buying a thing. No cash required, no credit required, nothing. Keep your wallets, right, in your bags. Don't pull out any money. It's absolutely democratized. Joy and happiness is not the exclusive domain of those that can purchase it. It's simply those that choose to see the world through the lens of a positive Bina attitude. This is the ultimate democratization of happiness as articulated in Judaism. It's similar to what I said about Chachma last week, which is wisdom. The same Mishnah that asks who is rich and answers he was happy with his lot also says who is wise? He who learns from every person. You don't have to have gone to the Ivy League university and studied under the greatest geniuses to be wise. All wisdom requires is the willingness to be open and to be willing to have the humility to know that there's more to learn. Then you're wise. The moment you choose discovery is the moment you embrace wisdom. It's the ultimate democratization. It's unbelievable. The gulf between Jewish values and the world. The world says, you want this, it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you. I mean, how much is an Ivy League education each year? I'm not saying you shouldn't go. If you go, you know, go and enjoy. But how much is an Ivy League education? $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000. Okay, today $100,000 for 4 years.
What?
No. How much per year? I'm asking per year.
Per year.
70,000. 70,000. Okay, good. Fine. Times how many years? 4 years. 6 years.
At least
4 years. How much is that? 200? Huh? Whatever. Multiple hundred thousand of dollars. And Judaism says, not that you shouldn't go to an Ivy League school. Go and enjoy. But that's not what wisdom is. You'll get information, but that's not wisdom. Wisdom is a choice. You can do it in the privacy of your own home. It's a choice that you make in the privacy of your own mind. Am I open or am I closed? Do I know everything or am I open to learning? That's it. Happiness is the same thing. It's a choice. You don't have to go to Needless markup, or whole paycheck. You don't have to do it. You should do it, but you don't have to do it. Right? We love Whole Foods. It's right down the street, right? We're good friends with all of our neighbors. Mazel tov. It's fine. You don't have to go there to be happy. You don't have to go there to be happy. If you want to spend money, you can go there. You don't have to go there to be happy. If you want to spend money, spend money. But you don't need that to be happy. Look, I have a few kids. Can I not? Fine. And I know one thing, right? The kid, and by the way, I'm only using kids because it's a safe way to talk about this about us. It's a strategy, right? Our kids, they want stuff. They really want stuff. And if they only get it, they'll be happy 5 minutes later after they have it. Yeah, whatever. I guess it was fun-ish. Yeah. Well, no, it's not even broken. It works. It's on the shelf, or it's not on the shelf, or they lost it, or they... Whatever. You know what? Einstein said, the definition of insanity is repeating the same thing again and again and again and hoping for different results, wishing for different results. You'd be kidding me. From when we're kids, We have the same expectation. If I only had this, it's like, remember Rocky and Bullwinkle?
Yes.
Right? Natasha and Boris?
Yes.
Remember Peanuts? Who's in Peanuts? Charlie Brown
and Lucy.
Remember Charlie Brown trying to kick the football?
Yes. Yeah.
And every single time she pulls the ball away?
Every
single time. You think you're about to hit it and there it's not. It's not there anymore. Oh, so close. Every single time without fail. You can't make this stuff up. Every single time? It's unbelievable. Again and again and again. We convince ourselves, or more often than not, we're convinced by others. If you just got this, you would be happy. Oh, it wasn't that, it was this. Oh, it wasn't that, it was this. It wasn't that, it's this. Our whole lives, we go from thing to thing to thing to try to find happiness. Our whole lives. A person could live 100 years, 90 years, 80, whatever it is. We should live 120 years, 180 years. But a whole life pursuing happiness, purchasing the next thing. Come on. It's not happiness. Something else is not happiness. Happiness, aim, habanim, smecha. You want to be happy? It has to do with bina, with an attitude. You want to be happy? Okay. Think in a positive fashion. Frame everything that happens positively. Now, it's not as easy as it sounds. It's not like a magic thing. But at least we're closer. Once we identify what it is, we can start working on it as opposed to not knowing and being in the dark about it. It's no longer in the dark. You can no longer claim you don't know the secret to happiness. This is the absolute secret to happiness. It is straight up an attitude. Now, okay. Text number 7. Who just read it? You just read it. Yaakov, please read text 7, page 65. Hugh Downs. I don't know who this person is. Of course I know who Hugh Downs is. Of course I do.
In 2020.
Yes, of course. Oh my gosh, in retrospect, 2020, I remember. Oh, hey there now. Okay, text number 7, go.
A joyful person is not a person in a certain set of circumstances, but rather a person with a certain set of attitudes.
Look at this guy. He was a Kabbalist also. Unbelievable. A joyous person is not a person in a certain set of circumstances. You will not get in... Okay, I'm not decreeing on anybody. People don't get into happiness. Doesn't happen. It's not something that happens. It's a certain set of attitudes. It's straight up what we're thinking about that dictates our emotional disposition. Now, let's talk about strategies. Strategies for developing a joyous attitude. So if we're saying that developing a joyous attitude, a healthy bina, positive bina, is critical, so how do we do that? So you can use bina. If you understand what bina is, you can leverage bina toward the positive bina pursuit. None of that made sense, but work with me here. Okay, in other words, if you understand what bina is, you can hope to develop a happier bina disposition or attitude. What is bina? Bina, we said, on a purely intellectual level, bina is understanding. Correct? Yes, we said that? Chachma is the pure insight. Bina is where you understand it. Part and parcel, a major key to bina, to understanding, is the ability to put things in the proper perspective. If you're truly understanding something, you are able to see something in stereo vision, which means you can see if it's close, if it's far, if it's big, if it's small, right? That's a healthy way of understanding. Forget about attitude and joy for a second. We're going to get back there. Healthy bina or a functioning state of bina is where you understand the thing, whatever that thing is, you understand it well, and you're able to understand what's important, what's less important. You have a picture of right?
So you put it in perspective.
Perspective. That is a key to a positive bina attitude as well. How often does something little happen? You know, I'm not going to mention his name because he got in a lot of hot water recently. He's a comedian, and we're not going to mention his name. However, he has an incredible bit. Incredible, and he's not so clean, but it doesn't matter. I mean, for right now. He has an incredible bit about being on a plane for the first time, and they're announcing that there's Wi-Fi on the plane. They're announcing Wi-Fi. This is one of the test flights for Wi-Fi a few years ago. For Wi-Fi, it's never really been done before. You're one of the first, you're beta testers, blah, blah, blah. Wi-Fi, free Wi-Fi, we're trying it out. Boom. Okay? Flight, everyone's logging on. It's great, it's fantastic. 20 minutes into the flight, it goes out. Captain or whoever it is gets on and says, sorry, we're having problems with it. Guy sitting next to him on the flight, next to the comedian, allegedly, according to the story, he says, I can't even say the word that he says, but he's like, this is, right? This is ridiculous. We'll use that. That's a clean word, right? This is ridiculous. And the comedian's take is something that you didn't even know existed half an hour ago, you are now upset that you don't have access to it. Never mind that you're flying in the air on a chair to your destination. A journey that would have taken, you know, 100 years ago would have taken months, if not years. The same people that went from New York would not be the same people in California. It would be another generation of people that would have been born and continued on, or people that they accumulate along the way. You are flying on a chair in the sky, higher than birds above the clouds. This is ridiculous. Wi-Fi doesn't work. Are you kidding me? This is an example of making something small big and making something big small. This is not having the proper perspective. Does this make sense? If Bina is understanding things in a masudar, orderly fashion, Bina is understanding. Understanding means you have a clear understanding. You have a clear picture. What's big is big. What's small is small. Bina means you, again, forget joy for a second. Forget attitude. Bina, if you understand something, you understand it. If it's big, it's big. If it's small, it's small. It's an honest, true understanding. Okay. Do we have that understanding about our lives?
Don't sort the small stuff.
Do we get bent out of shape? Yeah. Because the little, well, hold on, it's not like a, yeah, hold on, let's celebrate. It's like, yes, we do. Okay, hold on, slow it down. Right? But we do, you're right, we do. Right? Break out the cord. Right? Do we get bent out of shape? Think about the stuff that has upset you. I mean, I don't want to get anyone negative right now. Think about it after the class. But imagine what gets other people upset, right? So often, it's the little stuff. It's the really little stuff. It's the super tiny stuff. It's like, same comedian has a bit. It's like my phone. It takes a second to respond. It's beaming from satellites down in space. It's going to outer space and back. And you're complaining about a second and a half delay? The call didn't go through right away. It was dropped. Are you kidding me? Look at this. This is connecting with anybody in the world right now. Theoretically, it's not. Theoretically, right? If you have the right plan, it is, right? And you're complaining because it's like... Okay. Gratitude. Right? This is gratitude. But gratitude is born... What I'm saying is a healthy bina almost necessitates a positive bina. I'm going to say it again. A healthy, functioning bina almost demands a positive bina attitude. If you really saw things as they were, you couldn't help but be positive on life. If you saw all of the blessing, if you really assessed what you have, I would tell a story now, but I know I'm going to get emotional, so I can't tell the story. So maybe after the class, I'll be a little bit in a better, more conducive state, so I can say it. It's about a letter from the Rebbe to somebody, but I know I won't be able to get through it. So I'm going to skip it. Here's the point. If we have a healthy way of looking at things, if we judge what's big as big and what's small as small and insignificant as really insignificant, you're driving, someone gets in front of you. Really? That's it? Your day is ruined? Your colleagues have to suffer. Your family has to suffer because some guy on the highway got one car ahead of you. One car ahead of you in this arbitrary race of the highway. That's it. That's what does it. Oh, everything is terrible. Like, really? Bina is understanding. Do you really understand? If you so you're with me on point number one? Point number one is utilize Bina to develop a positive attitude. Bina means to see things as they are. So see things truthfully. If you saw things truthfully, there are so many more blessings that we have than the stuff that we might not have yet. Let's be grateful for what we have. Cherish every single blessing. If you did that, gratitude. This is gratitude. If you did that, everything becomes viewed through that lens. If I'm high, if I'm up on all of the big good things, then all the little stuff that's not so good becomes viewed within that general framework of, it's good stuff. Life is good. Yeah, big deal. So what? That's on them. They want to be like that? Fine. Whatever that is, it's fine. This didn't work out, that didn't work out, no big deal. It's point number one. Point number two. Bina tends to look at something not only in an... Well, Bina is not only about honestly looking at something to understand it. In other words, big stuff is big, small stuff is small. Bina is also, ideally, about understanding something all the way through to its conclusion. In other words, if you really understand something, you know where it's headed. It's like, oh, I didn't see that coming. Maybe you didn't understand it or think it all the way through. When you think something all the way through, Bina is understanding and thinking things through. If you think things through, you can think them through to the end. In the context of positive Bina attitude, this technique means that when you're facing a challenge that might otherwise get you down, or maybe you're at a crossroads, or maybe you're facing something difficult, and it might otherwise challenge your happiness quotient, you can train your mind, your Bina, strong Bina mind, that has the ability to look at things all the way through to the end. You have the ability to force yourself almost to see things through to a positive outcome. They say that certain disciplines of archery, they train the archers to envision the arrow going straight through the bullseye before they release it. So envision the end result. Envision the positive result before you move, before you take a step. So this piece of advice or guidance is like Bina, that has the ability to understand something from beginning to its end. Train yourself. We can train ourselves when faced with a challenge to have the ability to meditate and envision a positive resolution to the challenge that we're facing. So we're facing a challenge. Picture the positive resolution, and that itself can lift you to a happier state. text that I want to read about this. This is from a letter from the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson. Text number 13. Anastasia, you have to read it? Page 69. Sure. You want to read?
I can read it, yes. I'll be okay with me right here, so it doesn't matter something.
No worries.
So, be as joyful as you will be if desired result had already been achieved. Like, but what is the reason for this joy? Is it possible to delight in something like that does not exist yet? One should conceive the matter being resolved and then think about the ramifications of being resolved, and finally he should feel that it's already resolved and think about how he will feel now that the solution has been found. And if the matter in his mind is a positive one, he will be delighted and joyful as it had already taken place.
Oh, look at that psychological power. If you imagine, you're feeling that, right? If you imagine the positive resolution and conceive of the matters being resolved, think about what it means if it were resolved. And, you know, there are problem-solving exercises when you're collaborating with a team, right? It's like envision the solution and how you feel about the solution and how the solution would change everything. And now that you feel positive, now find it. That's almost like what we're saying here. I don't know, almost like that is what we're saying. Envision the positive resolution and how you would feel about that and the ramifications of that. And now you'll have the joy, and now you can achieve it. I want to ask you a very simple question. Imagine you're looking for something that you lost. Ah, here's a good example. There's a very important meeting, and you need to get to that meeting on time. And you're running, you're a bit tight on the schedule. And now you cannot find your keys. You cannot find your keys. So I'm going to ask you a question. It's a really important meeting, and you have no time to spare. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being very stressed and 1 being not stressed at all, how stressed are you?
11.
Yeah? You're stressed, right? It's human and natural to be stressed. I want to ask you another question. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being making it... I'm going to confuse myself with these 1 to 10s. Whatever. Let me ask you a simple question. Forget the scale. Okay? Scratch the scale. Being stressed will help you find your keys or hinder your finding the keys?
Hinder.
Correct? Yes? Are you more likely to find your keys if you're calm or if you're stressed? If you're telling yourself, I can't believe I did this, I'm always doing this, I'm going to be late, I'm going to ruin everything, Bob, all the negative, it's all Bina, it's all in the head right now, right? It's all in the head. You tell yourself negative stories, more or less likely to actually find your keys? Less likely, because you've told yourself a negative narrative. If you envision, stay calm and envision a positive resolution, right? Imagine you found your keys, you're on your way, it's all good, you can make it, or you'll get there when you get there and everything will be fine, you'll apologize and it's fine. If you imagine a positive resolution, you can be calm, you can be more effective. This is called using the Bina mind that has the ability to look at things all the way through to the end, leverage that ability of Bina for the positive. Very quickly, two more. I'm not going to be able to develop these. I just want to state these. We're out of time. I'll state them, and we have to close it out. Very quickly, another technique to develop or enhance our happiness is not necessarily in the mind, but in action. Fake it till you make it. There have been studies that have shown that people that hold a pencil in their mouth horizontally are reporting to be happier. I know what you're thinking. What are you talking about? But think about it. If you put a pencil like this and you need to keep it in your mouth, you're forcing the muscles of your mouth into a smile. And they've done studies. They've told people to put the pencil in the mouth like straight out, where you're kind of making like a frowny face, right? And then like this, like more of a smiling disposition. And they've these are scientific studies, right? We did them last week right here at Chabad. Right? No, these are scientific studies. And it's been shown that those that forcing the mouth into a smile, report being happier again and again and again, as opposed to those that are exercising other muscles. Fake it till you make it. Habit becomes second nature. You smile at someone, you'll be happier. The last point to enhance our happiness is something that I think you might find a little surprising. I think you'll find it surprising given the text that we're studying. But take a look at this beautiful text from Rambam, from Maimonides, text 16. Danielle, please read text 16, page 71. Here we go. Again, the antidote to sadness, or more importantly, a way to strengthen one's positivity, text 16.
When a person is depressed, he should alter his mood by listening to song and music and go for a stroll in the gardens.
Look at that. Maimonides says, put yourself in a more positive, relaxing environment. The atmosphere that you're in affects your mood. So we have 4 points. Number one, if Bina is really understanding, are you really putting the weight and the important and the things that are important? And if you do, you'll be a little bit happier. Number two, see things through to the end. Envision, even though it's not here, it hasn't yet materialized. Envision a positive resolution, and you can create it because you're more relaxed and you're happier. Number three, fake it till you make it. Smile, you'll be happier. Number four, put yourself in a more positive place. I have in my notes to talk about 3 strategies for dealing with sadness. But we've run out of time. So I want to thank you for joining me tonight. Those that wish to... I'm just saying, we're out. They're cutting off my mic. They're pulling me with the thing. All right, we're going to close it out. If those that want to stay, we can schmooze about that. Thank you very much for joining me tonight for lesson number 3 of the Kabbalah of Happiness. Kabbalah of Character. Oh, you're too kind, but keep on going.